on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Monday, June 23rd, 2025. And as we start another week of Invest Talk, another week of life, certainly things were eventful over the weekend. Now, thus far, it seems the developments, which we'll talk about when we run down what happened in the market today, seems like a lot has been shrugged off. And yet, things are constantly in motion. Anybody who tells you that they know exactly what's going to happen in the near future, the medium term, and the long term, in any of the many things that drive the market, is not a serious person. And so our job as investors is to try and understand what is happening, not to predict what's going to happen, but understand what is happening and how that might affect our lives, how that might affect our investments, how that'll ultimately affect our portfolios. And so we here at InvestTalk bring you a mixture of educational and actionable items each and every day of the week. But most importantly, you bring us something. You bring us your finance and investment questions, and you help drive the conversation. Now, before we talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics I have for you, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, Justin, Luke. This is Bill from Toledo, Ohio. Longtime listener of the show. I love the content. The stock I'm calling about is ticker symbol MRK. Which is Merck & Company. Just wondering if now's a good time to get into it. It's been beaten up pretty good, but everything I see, it looks to be pretty strong. Margins look good. Free cash flow looks good. Sales growth and EPS growth looks good. So just trying to figure out why it's taking it on the chin so much. I look forward to hearing your answer on the show. Thank you.
Merck is a global pharmaceutical company. They are a pharmaceutical giant. They have a pretty diversified portfolio that specializes in oncology, vaccines, diabetes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as with any pharmaceutical company, a lot of the value of it is derived from its drugs that it is, or not just its drugs that it is producing and selling now, but what it has in the pipeline. Now, yes, it is still a giant of the pharmaceutical world. It's still a nearly $200 billion company. Its revenue is still growing, albeit more slowly than the 6.5% you saw on average since 2019. And its margins are still pretty solid, right? In 2024, net margin 26.8%, projected to expand to 34.5% this year. Now, with that being said, right, it has had quite a rough 52 weeks, down 38.68% over the past year, down 19.42% year to date, and it's pushed it to a point where it's trading at 8.5 times forward-looking earnings, which is near the 5-year low of 8. And so the question is, you know, why is this the case? Well, Keytruda, one of their drugs, continues to have some pretty strong demand. Q1 sales grew at 4%. But Gardasil had a notable drop, right? We've seen it for 2 consecutive quarters. Very weak Chinese demand. Q1 sales were only $1.3 billion on the drug, down 40%, prompting a shipment pause to China. And then on top of that, you know, they do have some pipeline progress, some drugs that are in phase 3 trials, but not enough to have them boost their guidance going forward. They've had some pretty poor guidance for 2 consecutive quarters now. And again, Gardasil is a big, big, big drug for them. And geographically speaking, China's a big market, making up about 10% of their revenue even after the big drop-off. And so it goes back to what I originally said about pharmaceutical companies. Yes, the drugs you're selling now matter. And in this case, one of their biggest sellers, Gardasil, not doing well. But then the other part is what is in the pipeline. And yes, they're in late stage trials, but nothing really exciting there, such that I think that there's a huge catalyst in the near term. Now, we did at one point own Merck in some of our portfolios. We sold at the beginning of this year because we saw the path forward with the administration. We saw the HHS secretary's history of attacking Gardasil and didn't think that the market would really like that position for the company. And so for now, we still have to maintain a no on Merck. That is Merck and Company, ticker MRK. Thanks for the call. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 40 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you. My main focus point concerns this question. What is tokenized real estate? The property market is set to be revolutionized with tokenized real estate because it will enable fractional ownership, increase liquidity, and open up new investment opportunities. Also, we'll touch on a potential breakup between U.S. exchanges and Chinese stocks, some lawmakers urging the SEC to spur forward with delisting of Chinese companies. We also have a case study in what were the consequences as European countries slash migration. What did it mean for economic output? What did it mean for overall income levels? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on how the global businesses still doing pretty well in face of geopolitical risk, Middle East war, and rising threat of tariffs. We also have plenty more questions we're going to go over, including one on Unum Group, ticker UNM, and another on the Vanguard Energy ETF, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully some live questions from some of you out there throughout the show. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and take more of your questions on the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Hello, InvestTalk. This is Jose from New York, and I'm looking into buying a small position in Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
Now, it is up into a little bit of resistance, so you probably want a little bit of consolidation here.
So this company does not capitalize itself with equity. It does not capitalize itself with debt.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Let's play a caller question from 888-99-CHART.
This is James from Georgia. I was trying to call about ticker symbol SCCO.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
I appreciate the show, guys. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's whole body meal shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com. Code INVEST for 15% off.
Invest Talk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
Alrighty, it is Monday, and certainly we kicked off a day of interesting trading today. So let's talk about how the market moved on this Monday. U.S. stocks closing a bit higher near their best levels for the day. The Dow was up 89 basis points. S&P 500 up 96. NASDAQ up 94. Russell 2000 up 1.11%. From a sector basis, airlines, home builders, networking communications, software, grocers doing particularly well. Mag 7, mostly better. Tesla, the big gainer on the day with the launch of their robo-taxi, I believe in Texas. Relative underperformers included energy, managed care, biotech, and commodity chemicals. Elsewhere, the dollar index was down 30 basis points. Gold finished the opposite direction, up 30 basis points. And crude oil settled down 7.2%, dropping back below $70 a barrel. What was the big driver today? Well, you guessed it, Middle East tensions continue to dominate the headlines. But the market did appreciate that there was no really meaningful spillover from the U.S. military strikes over the weekend against those three Iranian nuclear development sites, Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan. But more importantly, and I think this is where oil dropped, is you saw Iran's counterattack, which targeted U.S. bases in the region. Most missiles were shot down by Qatar, I believe. A big boost to market sentiment. Why? Because of what they attacked. U.S. bases. Because apparently there was cooperation, giving the Qataris a heads up. Because they didn't strike U.S. or other countries' oil tankers. They did not threaten to close the strait. And now it doesn't mean that things can't devolve from here, but the market is saying, okay, this is the reaction. Well, it could have been worse. And so when you couple that with the dovish Fed speak from Bowman, who followed Waller from last week, highlighting that, well, maybe July is when we're going to start cutting rates, that's how you end up with a positive market and an outperformance by small caps that, again, tend to do better when debt is cheaper. But regardless of what these two Fed governors say, it is all about data dependency. And so let's take a look at the economic data that came out today. June U.S. flash PMIs composite came in a bit ahead of the consensus. Manufacturing was better while services were cooler. We also got May. Oh, that's actually, I think, all we had today. May existing home sales as well. Stronger than expected. Though the release noted something that I think we all know very well, and that is things are pretty expensive. Houses are pretty expensive. Housing costs are, in a way, crowding out, keeping out buyers. Now, looking ahead this week on the economic calendar, looks like we got the Conference Board Consumer Confidence and Richmond Fed Manufacturing on Tuesday, which is tomorrow. Wednesday, we'll get new home sales. Initial claims, durable good orders, final Q1 GDP, and pending home sales will be the highlights on Thursday. And personal income and spending report, which includes that core PCE inflation, will be out on Friday. Aside from the macro data, big week in congressional testimony as the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, is set to deliver his semi-annual monetary policy testimony on Tuesday and Wednesday. All right, let's keep things moving and get to a question from our InvestTalk YouTube comment section question bank. This one from our friend Captain Saw. It says, longtime listener from Nambia. I'm doing my MSc in financial management and doing a project on First Quantum Minerals. Let me type that in here. First Quantum Minerals. Okie doke. Listed on the TSX, which is the Canadian Stock Exchange, ticker FM, wondering what your thoughts are on this company. Let's take a look at First Quantum Minerals. It is, like I said, a company that is listed in Ontario in Canada. It engages in the production, exploration, and development of copper, nickel, gold, zinc, and other additives. and operates through a bunch of various business segments. Looks like most of its revenue comes from Asia and Australia, about 79% of its revenue. 10% of its revenue is coming from Europe. Now, that's the geographic segment. Let's look at a breakdown of what most of their metals is from. Well, this is still, again, on their business segments. Let me see if I can find something on where it comes from. About 80% of the revenue, it looks like, comes from copper itself. So they got mines in Zambia, in Mauritania, in Panama, all over the place. Now, as of Q1 2025, when they filed their annual report, looks like they did show that they were growing in terms of their operations for which they were mining. Now, I would expect that this company, well, they're doing pretty well over the past year, up 27.5% over the past year. Why? Well, they're positioned pretty well within the copper market, and in spite of where copper has been, it still has an essential demand for industrial and green energy transition uses. They also have pretty wide diversity. But, you know, anytime you have some of these mining companies, you have to be pretty cognizant of some of the political risks, especially when you're operating in countries that are non-developed countries, in the DRC, in Zambia, in Panama. And you also have to understand the commodity price sensitivity as well. Look at this revenue growth all over the place, or rather the revenue all over the place, positive, negative, actually fell. And in spite of that, it's up 17.86% year to date. And so, you know, this is a very small company, $848 million market cap. And it's trading at 51.8 times forward-looking earnings. Incredibly expensive. Can be incredibly volatile. When I go for miners, because of the regulatory risk, I like to spread it out. I like bigger names. So for now, I would pass on FM First Quantum Minerals. Moving into a break, still to come, my focus point and more questions, or rather, more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now, 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today is one that we don't typically discuss, and that is tokenization. So what is tokenization, and specifically, what is tokenized real estate? Well, essentially, when you tokenize something, you are taking a physical or a financial asset and you're giving it digital token backing. And so what that does is, if you think about it in the same way that a stock is an ownership in a company, similar thing here. What are the benefits of tokenization? Well, it enables fractional ownership and also trading on blockchain platforms. Now, Deloitte took a look at the overall tokenized real estate market and forecasted $4 trillion with a T, in real estate assets will be tokenized by the year 2035, up from about $300 billion in 2024. Now, the biggest share is expected in tokenized loan securitization. So you're taking the loans, taking the credit, tokenizing that, followed by private real estate funds and undeveloped land projects at about $50 billion. Now, what are some of the benefits here? Well, tokenization can streamline things, right? It can streamline fund operations. It reduces the amount of intermediaries because everything is easily identifiable in the blockchain. And it also can enable tailor-made investment options. New on-chain real estate funds use these things called trust deeds, and essentially that secures properties and ensures that once the debt is repaid, then the property ownership within the deed is then transferred. Tokenized mortgage-backed securities, another thing that are on offer, have a lot of benefits, right? They have fast reporting, same with what I mentioned before, traceability, and also cost savings from having fewer people needed to be involved in the process. Now, there's a bunch of platforms that are vying for, and you see this all the time when there's new investment products, vying for first mover status in terms of bringing these things to market. But all of them, whoever should win this race to do so, would be the one that allows for real-time asset monitoring and liquidity. Now, this is not without challenges, right? There are many blockchains. There are many companies. It is a very dispersed environment right now, which is typically what you see, again, when you have these new financial products. And it's not without the same challenges that you have when setting up a new traditional fund, right? Who are you going to custody? Can you be sure that you're in compliance with accounting rules? Maybe more so for this, how good of cybersecurity do you have? Think of trillions of dollars in real estate assets whose ownership is shown by the existence of these tokens being compromised with cybersecurity risks. This is to say that just because something seems new, just because something is flashy, just because something is in demand, it doesn't mean you should pretend as though you're ready by ignoring the risks that exist. Now, this was just a quick overview of what we may be headed for and what is in store for us with the proliferation of cryptocurrency. From Bitcoin to something as unique as tokenizing real estate or other physical assets. But it is, more than anything, an investment. And should you decide to undertake this investment, as with any other investment, it is critical that you understand what you own. Alrighty, it looks like we have a live call from Sammy in San Francisco, who has a question about Uber and is listening on AM 1220.
Hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to get your view on Uber. I have been watching the stock for a little bit. Recently, I heard that they're getting into the AI business, LLMs and things like that, which is kind of above and beyond what they are known for. So there may be an upside potential there, but I just wanted to get your view on Uber to see if this would be a good time to pick it up and kind of keep it for long term.
Okay, let's take a look at Uber Technologies, and we might not have time to fully answer this before the break, but Uber is, and it started as, right, a ride-sharing platform. It was a brilliant business model in that essentially its goal was get everybody to use this service and be at a loss. Once everybody has this as an integral part of their lives, then we start charging more money. And that's why you see in terms of net profit, right? They first started making money in 2023. Now their margins are pretty solid, sitting around 12%. Now year to date, they're up 41.31%. Over the past 52 weeks, up 21.41%. And compare that to the rest of the S&P 500, right? They're drastically outperforming here, as well as outperforming tech more broadly. Now, they moved into freight. They moved into mobile delivery of food when they saw that market because they had the infrastructure and the ability to do that. Gross bookings up 14% year over year. Revenue up 14% year over year. They had 3 billion trips. Their monthly active customers are up 14% as well. And so when we come back, we'll dive into, is AI something that can be the next catalyst for the next leg upward? Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story. The Strait of Hormuz is a vital maritime choke point. So what's going on with that? That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, for the break, we were diving into Uber. We were talking about it finally turning profit in 2023, its margins expanding, its revenue growing. And its usage growing as well as an expanding operation into food delivery and freight. And so the recent news a couple of days ago was that they're also going to expand their AI solutions business. And that was really the core of Sammy's call, right? And when you hear, okay, most companies utilizing AI, oftentimes I think that it is just a way to boost stock price in the short term. It's like a couple of days ago, or a couple of years ago rather, when anything that was blockchain would go through the roof. And so in a similar way, that's my first thought here, but this is different, right? This is actually expanding a business that Uber already has, where it helps provide data to labs and to companies and data service businesses from their users, right? They're monetizing their user data. And so when you couple that with the announcement also that they're going to launch a new foundry to train internally AI models as well, I kind of like that. And the reason why is Uber has a massive amount of data. And the way you improve these models is by processing more and more data. And so with that in mind, I mean, Uber has transitioned and is in the middle of transitioning into a more mature revenue generating and business expanding company. It's trading at 26 times forward-looking earnings, which is cheaper than it has been on average for a while, right? But you do have to understand it's had a pretty big run-up over the past year. Upside probably a little limited because of that. I like it. I like where it's moving. I would wait for a little bit of a pullback before I tossed any more money in there. That is Uber Technologies, ticker UBER. All right, let's keep things moving and get to another fresh question from a listener in Denmark.
Hello, InvestTalk. I have a question about an ETF, VDE. Vanguard Energy ETF. Wouldn't you recommend an themed ETF like this? I think the energy sector at the moment seems quite attractive with all the turmoil in the Middle East. But I know that many professionals, they advise against themed ETFs and would rather suggest a normal index fund like the S&P 500 or the MSCI World Index. So I was wondering what your thoughts were in that direction. Thank you very much. This is Yannick from Denmark. Bye.
All righty. VDE is the Vanguard Energy ETF. It is a 9 basis point expense ratio fund that is passively managed. And so it's all the energy companies within the MSCI USA IMI index. Because of that, it's about 86.84% large caps, 8.46% mid, 3.95% small caps, and a little bit of micro caps as well. Now, I wouldn't call this a themed ETF. That's not what this is. It's a sector ETF. And I don't think you should put all of your money in the Vanguard Energy ETF. I don't think you should put all your money in any sector ETF. But the ways that you can utilize sector ETFs is to make active bets, right? If the core of your investment is something like a market cap weighted ETF, right? Like the S&P 500 or the Russell 3000 or some MSCI global index, you can tilt towards these sectors and use these funds to essentially go after whatever your theme is, whatever your thesis is. And so if you're trying to tilt towards energy a little bit, again, don't put all your money in the energy ETF. This is a good way to do it. Why? Because it's broadly diversified, but also it's cheap. You moderate your risk while still taking active bets relative to the overall market. And so if that's what you're trying to accomplish, I think that's perfectly reasonable to use something like the Vanguard Energy ETF, ticker VDE. Alrighty, this year has certainly been a year of rising tensions, not just between the US and China in terms of trade, but the US and pretty much everybody else. Now, since 2019, what we've seen is over 80 companies, Chinese companies, have been delisted from US exchanges because of a decade now of rising political and regulatory tensions. Because of this, Chinese companies now make up less than 2% of the New York Stock Exchange, and 30% of their 2% is just Alibaba. Now, not only are companies delisting, you're also seeing Chinese IPOs decline. They're now small, on average, just about $7 million, and often lack investor confidence at all whatsoever. And so this is more of a self-delisting issue, right? There are a lot of U.S. lawmakers, a lot of state lawmakers who are lobbying, pushing the SEC to eliminate Chinese listings pretty much entirely because of many concerns, because of security concerns, because of concerns over accounting measures, because of forced labor for some of these companies. And so you're seeing a lot of firms, again, just self-delist here. Didi, PetroChina, pretty large firms, pull it out of the United States markets due to pressure from Beijing to avoid U.S. scrutiny. I don't know what that says about their internal controls and their ability to undergo an audit, but it speaks for itself. Right? In 2022, there's an audit agreement which was supposed to improve oversight, but what ended up happening? You had a lot of Chinese companies list in the United States under this structure called VIE, Variable Interest Entity, and that lacked a lot of shareholder protections. And so that kind of undercut what the goal was in that 2022 audit agreement. Now, despite them not listing in the United States as much, you're still having banks like JP Morgan help Chinese firms by listing via Hong Kong entities, which is further undercutting some of these U.S. policy goals. And the reason why a lot of people are concerned, again, potential scams, market manipulation, shell companies that are misusing listings. Understandably, if you're an investor, if you're a lawmaker, if you're supposed to be enforcing some of these rules, well, you're going to be a little bit concerned. Interestingly enough, as of now, for the first time in decades, no Chinese state-owned enterprise is listed in the U.S. And that was after China Mobile was forcibly delisted just a couple years ago. Understandably, as we can all see, the political climate under this administration and really bipartisan sentiment against Chinese financial ties continues and will continue to contract the amount of listings and the exposure investors can get on U.S. exchanges of Chinese companies. The trend, regardless of the alleviation of trade tensions, seems to be holding. And the concerns are very real. Alrighty, let's keep things moving and play another caller question now.
Hello, Andrew Beal from Maine calling. Thank you for your show, very helpful. I have a question for you about Unum Disability Insurance, long-term life insurance company, UNUM. I have held this a full position in this company since 2021 and have done very well on it, but I'm feeling like it's a bit priced to perfection on the three driving factors to its valuation, one being general employment, second being interest rates, and the third being claims. I've already trimmed quite a bit, but I'm thinking I should trim even more. Good company, I feel like, but just feeling like it's perhaps a bit priced to perfection. Would love your opinion. Thank you.
Yeah, so Unum Group, ticker UNM, it's an insurer. They specialize in workplace disability, life, and supplemental benefit insurance. Geographically, all of its revenue, for the most part, comes to the United States, about 92% of its revenue, about 8% internationally. Now, it's a fairly large company, about $13 billion in market cap. It's up 57.46% over the past 52 weeks, up 9.64% year to date. A lot of this is because of some pretty solid net earned income growth. Their net income looking pretty solid, as well as does the growth in earnings per share. Now, it's trading at a pretty reasonable valuation, though, right? 8.5 times forward-looking earnings, near the upper end of its five-year range, albeit, and slightly above its book value, which is something you don't typically see of insurers. Now, recently, revenue did miss expectations. Return on equity, though, greater than 20% on its core operations. It's a complicated question, right? You can say, okay, it's priced to perfection here, But the growth for this company is still here in spite of missing on recent earnings. And they've done a pretty good job of managing claim variability through the better part of three quarters. And so for us, right, we're expecting earnings in just about a month now. A lot of analysts are expecting a little bit of an earnings recovery coming into this most recent quarter. And so Unum Group, which has performed very well because of this growth, because of this expansion in earnings per share, albeit minus the last quarter, because it does so with very little debt on its balance sheet, because of all of these things, we actually own Unum in one of our strategies. And so we did start to trim it a little bit, but we think that the headwinds to earnings were a little bit temporary. So for us, we're not making any more decisions until we see what comes about in Q2 results expected in late July. If you're up a lot, I think it's perfectly reasonable to trim and invest elsewhere. But for us, we're still holding on to this name. That is Unum Group, ticker UNM. Alrighty, you are listening to Invest Talk now with more than 61 million downloads. And Justin and I really want to thank you all for that. And to celebrate that, why don't we keep things moving with another question?
Hi, this is Dan from Walnut Creek, and thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of stocks that I have in a portfolio where I've purchased some stocks that have done well in the past and that were down on their luck. I've done pretty well with this portfolio. But I've got a couple. I have Deckers Outdoor Corp, DECK, and Crocs Incorporated, CROX. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on these two stocks. I plan on holding them for a few years. If you could give me some input on those two, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, let's take a look at Deckers Outdoor first. It is the parent company of Hakka and UGG. About 64% of their revenue comes to the United States. About 36% of their revenue is international. Had a rough year, down 50.54% year to date, down 38.52% over the past 52 weeks. Revenue growth, fantastic from 2020, but slowing down into this year. And again, they've had poor guidance as well. Their margins, still fantastic for this type of company. Between 14 to 19% net margin over the past 4 years. Supposed to settle down at about 16.9% this year. It's currently trading well below its five-year average. The average is about 22.3, currently trading about 16.3 times forward-looking earnings. Q4 revenue, beat. Q1 revenue, beat as well. They have pretty strong brand momentum, but because of this tariff pressure, right, because of the costs of manufacturing these things, of importing these things, well, they have been struggling pretty much all of this year. Now let's take a look at Crocs. Just ticker CROX. And CROX is Crocs. They're those funny little shoes that have the holes in them and the little thing that goes over your foot. And sometimes you put it behind your heel and you're in sport mode. They also own the Hey Dude brand segment as well. Now, this company is also down, but down far less. Down 11.1% over the past couple months. That's year to date. Down 37% over the past 52 weeks. And in a similar fashion, revenue is projected to not grow that much this year as well. But when you're looking at these two companies, right, I think that revenue growth was substantially stronger with Deck. Their margins were also a little bit better, 58% gross margin, sitting around 24% operating margin. And both of these kind of face the same risks. The same macro risks, the same tariff-associated risks. And so given this, if you have to choose between one of them, I think you'd probably want to go with Crocs. Lower valuation, right? It's only trading at 7.7 times forward-looking earnings, substantially below on a percentage basis. It's five-year average. It has solid free cash flow. About $719 million in free cash flow for a business of its size, right? It's about a $5 billion business versus the similar amount, exact same amount of cash flow nearly for Deckers for a business that's three times the size. But the key here is if you are willing to stomach trade policy turbulence that can turn on a dime. And so for me right now, I think given the exposure to tariffs, I'd probably stay away from both of these names. But if I had to choose one, I would go with Crocs. That's Decker versus Crocs. We're going to CROX. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART. And while you're at it, don't forget to cruise over to the new Invest Talk store. It's open now at investtalkstore.com.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel.
Quick question on ticker symbol LYV, that's Live Nation. Seems to be doing pretty well. You know, they're in the events and concert industry. Balance sheet looks okay. Just wanted to get your thoughts on it. Let me know when you can. Appreciate all you do. Thanks.
Live Nation, ticker LYV, is a $36 billion ticketing company, right? An entertainment company. They engage in producing, marketing, and selling live concerts. I believe they also own some venues as well. Pretty globally diversified. 62% of their revenue comes from the US, 20 from Europe, and 18 from elsewhere. Most of their revenue coming from ticketing and the concerts themselves. Now, in terms of earnings, right, they did have solid revenue growth, slightly below estimates. Their earnings per share in their most recent quarter, Q1, also missed consensus as well. But in spite of that, concert activity was up 12% year over year. And because of this, they're starting to expand their footprint, investing $1 billion in various cities to have some sort of ownership in venues themselves, not necessarily huge huge concert venues, but smaller venues as well, putting on more and more shows. And they also started to expand into Latin America and Japan. So obviously the revenue that's coming in, they're reinvesting into the business. It's providing them good opportunities. Now, it's not particularly well, but there are some things you should be cognizant of here, right? There is a hostile DOJ going after what, you know, the Biden administration started, some of these junk fees. What are these lawsuit outcomes going to be? There's definitely some valuation pressures here as well, given that it's up 62% over the past year. It's trading at 60 times forward-looking earnings. And so for a company that's trading 60 times forward-looking earnings, whose main revenue source is something that really gets hit in a recessionary environment, people don't tend to go and pay a bunch of money for concerts. Tickets that are already crazy expensive when they have less money to spend. I don't know. Good company. It's got its tentacles everywhere within the concert business, but too expensive given some of the risks. That's Live Nation Entertainment, ticker LYV. Let's see if we can squeeze one more question in now.
Hi there, Justin and Luke. I have a question, gentlemen. I finally have some cash on hand. I'm looking at a couple stocks, and I was wondering to get your opinion, please, on if one would be better than the other. The first that I'm looking at is COP, ConocoPhillips, I believe that is. I'm wondering if oil is making a comeback. I don't know if they also do any natural gas or any other work of that nature, but I've been seeing their price and they've been moving up slowly. The other one I'm looking at is HMY, Harmony Gold. I believe they also do, some copper too. I don't know if I'm too late for the gold rush, but hopefully not. I feel this one is well positioned. What are your thoughts on these two? Look forward to hearing it on the show. Have a great day.
So this is interesting. So this is the opposite side of the spectrum here, because on one hand, you have oil, which has been doing very poorly, and gold, which has been doing really well. And so the question is, are the trends going to continue, or do you end up buying the top of gold? And can you possibly buy the bottom of oil? Given how cheap it's getting, if you have a longer term time horizon, I would probably be more willing to invest within the oil space if you don't have any oil exposure at all. Again, because of the risks of not understanding how quickly things can move, that's why I don't think it's ever a good idea to completely be out of a sector. And so if you have zero oil exposure, Congrats, you're getting in at some pretty bottom prices here. On the opposite side, gold tends to move positively as things are devolving, and then quickly the opposite way all at once and unwinding. And so the risk of being at a top here by buying something like Harmony certainly exists. If you have no gold exposure, I think it's a good time to be invested in gold because of the uncertainty we have globally. If you are in it more for the long term and can stomach the depressed demand, well, the next couple months may be a good time to pick up some oil stocks. That's COP or HMY. Thanks for the question. We did it. We made it. It's the end of the show. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. Justin and I thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Guys, we really appreciate it. Just tell one person to subscribe to Invest Talk on either iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. If today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, whether it's all really working together, let's chat. At KPP, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence. It's kind of like when you go to the doctor, not because you're feeling sick, but because it's something you should do every year to prevent the bad issues. If you're interested, just go over to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.